Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is David Steinberg, a distinguished professor emeritus of Asian Studies at Georgetown University and a specialist on Burma, Myanmar. He previously served as a member of the Senior Foreign Service, U.S. Agency for International Development, Department of State, and was also the director of four technical assistance in Asia and the Middle East and director for the Philippines, Thailand, and Burma Affairs. His books include Turmoil in Burma, Contested Legitimacies in Myanmar, and Burma, the State of Myanmar. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Steinberg.
Thank you for including me.
Well, thanks for joining us, David. And the United Nations now is saying that military leaders in Myanmar must face genocide charges for their genocidal attacks on the Rohingya. So isn't this a big shift? This is pretty significant, isn't it?
It is very significant. In fact, the Rohingya issue, I've written, has become the defining issue of Myanmar these days, where before Aung San Suu Kyi and her house arrest was the defining issue of Myanmar, at least to the outside world, to the Western world. So this is a major shift, not only with also obvious terrible repercussions for the Rohingya themselves, but for the society as a whole, because it involves the question of investment, of relations that go far beyond the Rohingya issue, and it goes into the issue of Chinese role in Myanmar and U.S. and Western roles in Myanmar as well.
But the UN report also is referring the case to the International Criminal Court, and the report says that the crimes documented against the Rohingya are, quote, shocking for the level of denial, normalcy, and impunity that is attached to them. Military necessity would never justify killing indiscriminately, gang-raping women, assaulting children, and burning entire villages. So something really terrible has happened in this country that we associate with this Nobel Prize-winning leader.
Well, that is absolutely true. Now, the question is whether that Burma, Myanmar, is not a member of the International Criminal Court. So it may go that, but that has no effect within the country itself. There are other things that can be done, of course, sanctions and various other aspects of trying to deal with the situation. It is exceedingly bad. It is, I would argue, the question of genocide is a legal question, but I have argued that ethnic cleansing has been very, very clear. Actually, in September, early September 2017, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, in a testimony to the House Subcommittee on Asia, said that he refused to use the term ethnic cleansing. But then 3 weeks later, Secretary of State Tillerson did use the term. So the U.S. has had that position. There are people who, in the human rights community, who have argued that it is, in fact, genocide. I leave that to the lawyers, but the situation is exceedingly bad, and these are the most deprived people, I would argue, in Asia.
Well, again, the idea, the irony of a Nobel Peace Prize winner being, first of all, somebody, as you mentioned, who defining the politics of the country when she was under house arrest, and now that she's the sort of de facto leader, although the military still have a powerful presence. What explains her situation? Is she as much of a kind of Buddhist nationalist? I can't imagine what the term is for those, the Buddhist majority in Myanmar, who feel no compunctions, no conscience about murdering their Muslim neighbors.
Well, I think it's, I can't tell you what she actually feels. I've known her for many years, not that well, but I've since 1985, and we have talked not about the Rohingya issue itself. She understands democracy, at least in theory. She's read all the books on democracy that we all have read, and but she is in a very difficult position. She has said, and I basically quote her, that I am not a democratic icon. I am a politician. But in fact, in the international community, she has been a democratic icon, And in politician inside the country, she has not been very successful. The reasons are very clear. She's tried to walk a very fine line between and keeping some semblance of power, at the same time not antagonizing the military. What you have is a military that really controls the country. They have formed a constitution in 2008, which was designed specifically to perpetuate their control over those aspects of the society they felt important. Now, they have three critical ministries under their control: the Ministry of Defense, naturally the Armed Forces, the Ministry of Minority Affairs, and the Home Ministry. And the Home Ministry is particularly important because it controls not only the police and the intelligence, but the bureaucracy from the center to the village. So Aung San Suu Kyi can control the legislature, but she can't control the implementation of policies. And she can't change the Constitution because the military has enough seats designated for them to prevent that from happening. So she is stuck, but she has done a rather poor job, I would argue, of trying to deal with this issue. In September 2017, she gave a speech to the foreign diplomats in Naypyidaw, the capital. And basically, it was as if she was uninformed of what was going on in Rohingya, that she denied basically everything, and she was as if she were in a cocoon of some sort. This did not sit well with anyone. And it was a disaster, I think, in terms of relations with the outside world. And since then, her position has deteriorated very clearly.
And again, I'm speaking with David Steinberg, a distinguished professor emeritus of Asian studies at Georgetown University and a specialist on Burma, Myanmar. He previously served as a member of the Senior Foreign Service, U.S. Agency for International Development, and the Department of State, and also as the Director for Technical Assistance in Asia and the Middle East, and Director for the Philippines, Thailand, and Burma Affairs. His books include Turmoil in Burma, Contested Legitimacies in Myanmar, and Burma, the State of Myanmar. So, David Steinberg, the Rohingya have been largely run out of the country, haven't they? At least 700,000 Rohingya are next door in Bangladesh, where they're not particularly welcome. They're in incredibly marginal land, in vast refugees, impromptu kind of settlements that are subject to flooding when the monsoons hit, and even elephants apparently trample through there regularly. It's a horrible, horrible situation, is it?
That is true. It is a horrible situation. And the Bangladeshis don't want them.
Right.
And the Burman majority don't want them either. Now, who are these people? And there's a kind of myth that's been built up. They say, well, we've been here forever, and therefore we should be citizens of the country. The Burman majority, who are 88% Buddhists, say, no, 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 you're Bengalis, you should go back to Bangladesh, where you came from. Well, both are partly right. There have been Muslims in that area since the 16th century, but for a small number. Then when the British controlled Burma, they governed Burma as a province of India till 1937. So there was clear migration back and forth that was free. So Indians did come to Burma. Then in the Second World War, that area was fought over, and the Rakhine Buddhists, they opted to go with the Japanese, while the Muslims went with the British. Then you got the Bangladesh War for Independence, 1971 or so, and then migration moved back and forth across that border. So it is exceedingly complex. There have been people there for many, many generations, but there are also relatively recent in people coming in. And that's why the Burmese government will not use the term Rohingya, because if they use the term, they're saying, well, you are an ethnic group, and as an indigenous ethnic group, we can give you citizenship. So they deny this and say, you're not an indigenous ethnic group. The citizenship law doesn't apply to you, and you are foreigners and go away.
Well, the UN report, of course, accuses the army of Myanmar, of genocide,
right.
And they are very much in power. And even though Aung San Suu Kyi is the figurehead, as we discussed, we're not quite sure about how much influence she has over events. My understanding is this incredibly corrupt military junta, they've been around for a long time. They've really taken care of themselves and their families in an ostentatious and rather disgraceful way. But they're also, are they not, in effect, geopolitically protected by the Chinese?
Well, the Chinese will not criticize the Myanmar government and the military about the Rohingya issue. The Chinese are concerned about the minorities on their borders, where there is fighting going on, but it's of a different scale. It's not that enormous outflow of people that you have in the Rohingya. I mean, one of the Chinese policy characteristics, I would argue, is we want a peaceful border, we want no refugees, we want Chinese business, both public and private, and we don't want any Americans on the border. That's the Chinese, and that applies to North Korea, by the way, at the same time. With the Rohingya, it's a very different matter. Let's say it's over 700,000, whatever the figure is, of Rohingya who fled into Bangladesh. A couple hundred thousand fled around 1978, and another couple hundred thousand fled about 1991 and 2, although most of those were returned to Burma under the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. So this is not a new problem. And the Burmese government, the military say, well, there was a raid on us by armed militants, and this is a terrorist thing, and we had to put it down. Well, the way they put it down, of course, was horrible and far in excess of anything that could be justified under any sort of conditions. So this is going, as I say, going to affect the country as a whole and even the international relations of the country as well.
And, of course, two Reuters journalists who documented what the UN is now calling genocide against the Rohingya in Rakhine province in Burma, Myanmar, they're still in jail. The verdict was in their case supposed to be delivered today, but it's been postponed until September the 3rd. When you
that's a travesty of justice.
Of course it is, yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
The Burmese government under President Thein Sein, starting in 2011, did liberalize the media to a degree. But a lot of the old laws, even from the colonial period, are still on the books, and there has been repression. Not as bad as under the junta from 1988 to 2011, but still bad enough to make it to cause these kinds of problems.
But when you say, in terms of the general's relationship with China, the Chinese also have their Muslim problem with the Uyghurs, and there's a great deal of censorship about what's going on there. But there are some reports that indicate that the Chinese are being pretty brutal in cracking down on the Uyghurs that may be aspiring towards some kind of independence or autonomy. So there's
exactly. And that is, I mean, the Chinese view any sort of Muslim problem in other countries as possibly affecting their own Muslim problem, which is, of course, far bigger and covers far more territory than anything in Myanmar. So, yes, they are concerned, and they do not want to see any alleviation of the Muslim situation there that would allow the Rohingya to become, let's say, more autonomous in some sort of federal system under the state of Myanmar.
Well, just in the last few minutes, David Steinberg, what does this mean? Obviously, it's a diplomatic blow to Aung San Suu Kyi, and the military junta there have been targeted by the UN and directly accused of genocide. The U.S. has sort of lost its leverage there, I think, pretty much altogether, has it not?
It has. The first thing, there will be more sanctions introduced, I assume. But the first question we have to ask is, realistically, what will it take to get rid of sanctions? For example, we have sanctions against Russia because of the Crimea. Do we really expect Russia to give up the Crimea, its its Black Sea naval base and strategically critical to them? I doubt it. If we say to the Rohingya issue, they must be citizens, otherwise the sanctions are in place, I don't think we'll see the alleviation of that problem at all. So we have to have some realistic assessment of what it will take to get rid of the things we're going to impose. And we normally don't ask that question. But it's the first question we should ask.
Well, I think you can make the case that sanctions are just a palliative to make us feel good and mostly a sop to the domestic audience that the government's actually doing something about something that we've been outraged by.
I think you're absolutely right.
So
that is true.
You know, Putin's behavior demands some kind of response, and certainly the generals in Myanmar, their behavior demands a certain response. But just in closing, what would you suggest?
That is, again, what can one do?
Mm-hmm.
One can say, okay, we are not going to send you any arms, we're not going to sell you any arms. Fine. That's the easy thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the real issue of how to deal with the military is something we have not really addressed. As I said, they designed a system to keep themselves in power. They were willing to make fringe benefits outside of their elements of control because it really didn't affect their central core of power. Now we have a situation where we have to deal with that kind of dilemma. Yes, you can pick five or six of the senior generals and those in the regional command and sanction them specifically. But remember that Min Aung Hlaing, who's commander-in-chief of the army, is likely to be a candidate for president in the 2020 elections. Even if he doesn't run for it, he could still be elected through various indirect means. Aung San Suu Kyi, if she's well enough, was also likely to be a candidate for the presidency at 2020. So you've got a very, very difficult and explosive situation there that we have to watch with a great deal of sensitivity. And we really don't have that sensitivity. And as you said, we don't have that leverage either.
Well, David Steinberg, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
I'm sorry to complicate your life.
No, not at all. I mean, you and I are doing well compared to the Rohingya, so we got to keep our eye on the ball. I thank you again. And again, I've been speaking with David Steinberg, a distinguished professor emeritus of Asian studies at Georgetown University and a specialist on Burma-Myanmar. He previously served as a member of the Senior Foreign Service, U.S. Agency of International Development, and the Department of State, and was also a director for technical assistance in Asia and the Middle East and director for the Philippines, Thailand, and Burma Affairs. And his books include Turmoil in Burma, Contested Legitimacies in Myanmar, and Burma, the State of Myanmar. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.